Let's see. I think we all have many, many rites of passage, and I picked one special one in my life that had a big influence on what happened to me. And it's the buildup and the year that I was an intern after completing medical school. It's the hardest I've ever worked in my life. And the story goes back to the summer before starting medical school. I did get some scholarship aid. I borrowed a ton of money. It took me 9 years in practice to pay it off. And I worked during the summers and usually during the school year, and we made a go of it. I didn't always use the best judgment in choosing my jobs. I had gotten a $100 scholarship. It was a lot of money back in my day, from the president of Raybestos, which was the largest manufacturer of brake rings in the United States. And I contacted them, and they gave me a job, and I went. Big, filthy, huge warehouse kind of a setup. They had me do everything that was to be done. The brake rings had a lot of grease on them, so you put huge asbestos gloves on. You piled the rings on a piece of metal, and there was a boiling, sweet-smelling, organic, extremely toxic fluid, and you degreased them. And if you got drunk, they pulled you away and somebody else took over. No masks in those days. Then the two older guys in my group mixed huge vats of asbestos with enough acetone to make it gooey. They stuck it in a hopper. It squeezed out a thin strip about a half an inch thick, 5 inches wide, this long, and there was a cutter. Okay? And it would go like this. This was the motion. When you got to 50, you'd drop a piece of wood down a board and you'd do it again like this. And you got to, so you did it 60 a minute. You just went like this. But the thing blocked up and you had to make sure not to put your hand in there to clear it because you wouldn't have a hand. But we survived that one. The room was so dusty with asbestos fibers, sometimes you couldn't clearly read the signs on the wall. Somehow I'm still here and having no sequelae of that, but it was a life experience. And the final thing was taking the metal rings and rings of asbestos out of those pieces we pulled off, putting them together, and with several thousand pounds, putting them into a device to compress them and send them up into a cooker. And it was way up on the right, and it was extremely noisy, and I lost about 30% of the hearing in my right ear. But I finished. I made $1,200 that I saved, but that would take care of books and room and board, but I needed $1,500 for my tuition, or I would have had to turn down medical school. I made an appointment to see the president of the company, an old, smoked-out guy who looked much older than his stated age. He didn't say much. He said, come back in 3 days. I came back in 3 days. There was a check for $1,500. There was a note to sign saying due and payable interest-free in 5 years. That would be after my internship. Nice guy. I actually stuck his name on a piece of paper on the wall with two pieces of scotch tape, and every time I thought about quitting medical school, which it was pretty often, it wasn't a fun adventure, I would look up and see his name and one other person that had helped me out, and I'd recommit myself, and off we went. A second thing to tell you about is after my second year of medical school, I may have mentioned in a previous presentation, I wanted to get out and do something. I volunteered for the Catholic Mission Board, like all good Jewish medical students do. And I went to Guatemala, 10,000 feet above sea level. I lived with four priests and three nuns. We got along perfectly, pulling teeth, doing all kinds of wonderful things in the Garden of Eden. It was the grandest adventure ever in my life. And maybe I'll take a whole time sometime and make a talk on that. And the Sacramento County Medical Society sponsored me and occasional physicians. And when I finished, they sent me a letter and said, why don't you come to Sacramento County Hospital for your internship? What did I know? I went. When I got there, it was a 550-bed hospital, which it still is. It's now the hospital where UC Davis is, loaded with professors, teachers. It's one of the fine teaching medical institutions in the state. We had no teachers. It was do it, learn. I hope that style has gone out in medicine. I don't know. But that's what it was, and I promise you. Instead of 24 interns, for some reason, we only had six. Instead of 10 GP residents, we had 4. Okay? They paid us $200 a month. Because they wanted to attract more interns the next year, they gave us a second check for $125. I had one vacation for 3 days. I saw the Hearst Castle. I glanced at San Luis Obispo and back to the salt mines. And every day went as follows. I got up at 4:30, 4:45. I shaved and showered. I ate. I ran across O Street to the hospital. At 5:30, I got there. I raced all day long. At 5 o'clock, everybody went home, and I was on call from 5 until 7 the next morning. I admitted between 3 and 17 patients every night. I ran all the next day till 7 in the evening, catching up, sort of. And then I went home and ate. My wife was a great cook and took good care of me. And then I crashed, and the next morning I did it again. And I did that for a year. I promise you it was hard work. On the surgical rotation, I don't know how many times I fell asleep holding retractors in the operating room. Fred was one of the residents. He was a great guy. Hey, Don, come on, babes. Come on, babes. We need you here. Pay attention. Yeah, yeah. Okay, Fred, I'm here. And that's what it was. And then run. On medicine, I didn't even have a resident. There weren't enough, so I didn't get one. I had a book in my pocket, loose leaf, 500 pages, diabetes, insulin, page 326, and I did it. That's what they wanted us to do. There happened to be one man there who'd had heart trouble. He was 50 years old, Robert Sudran, and he just worked in the clinics, but he was a great guy. And he pulled all of us aside, and he said, anytime you have a medical problem during your 3 months on this rotation, you call me. I'll help you. And he did. We wrote a paper together. He helped me fight some deal to fix the lab up in the hospital. And he's always been my model for what a physician should be ever since. Robert Sudran. I'm sure he's long gone now. On obstetrics, I delivered 163 babies. Pure chance. They said I broke the record, but whatever. I like delivering babies. The girls, the college kids back in New England would get pregnant and come out, have their baby, and put it up for adoption. Abuse cases, retarded people, whatever. My wildest case, a 15-year-old girl, very skinny, not married, pregnant, and bleeding. We put her at bed rest. That's the way we did it. No ultrasounds, no crazy chemicals like we have now. And every day you'd say, hi, how you doing, kid? Listen to the baby. Heart sounds are good. And then off we go. And she was there my whole three-month rotation. And one day, it was always busy, usually. The residents were up doing surgery a floor above. I was there all by myself. The only patient was this young girl. Hey, this is sleep time. Just like that, I go to sleep. I still can do it, but I don't stay asleep as long as I'd like to. But anyways, be that as it may, 10 minutes later, the nurse catches me. She's in labor. Oh, my God, it's going to be a preemie. Call the pediatrics. Call the residents. They broke from scrub in the operating room and came down. They weren't very happy. They wanted to finish their surgery. And with forceps and an incision, the standard incision that I'd taken care of a million times, a little boy, 2 pounds, 9 ounces, off he went. He looked okay. And they said, okay, doc, it's all yours. Finish it up. Well, I could do that in my sleep with my eyes closed. And what happens is sometimes there's a little membrane still there and a little fluid behind it. And with a gloved finger, you go flick. It drops in the proverbial bucket. And then you gently pull, and the placenta gets delivered. Well, something was wrong. And the membrane was coming out. And I kept doing this, but no fluid came. And all of a sudden, this skinny little girl goes, oof. And in my hand is a complete placenta, completely disattached, no oxygen supply. And inside was a little girl. We had no way to know. We didn't have ultrasounds. I knew I couldn't call anybody. It was me. I took some scissors, opened it up. Fluid drained out, sucked the baby out. A little girl weighed about the same. She looked healthy. As it turned out, the little boy didn't make it. A month later, my little girl went home, and she was fine. So that was a nice adventure. In the emergency room, a million things. He's telling me I'll be done soon. A million crazy patients. I picked up an ectopic pregnancy. I was pleased. I had a carny guy that worked in the carnivals that wanted morphine and said he was having kidney stones, and the resident and I could find no evidence. I refused it. And as he walked out, every couple steps, he turned around and pointed at me and said, "I'm going to kill you." It took me about 2 years to forget that guy and stop looking for him. Anyways, the year finally ended. Thank God. What happened? What did I decide? Well, one thing I noticed for the next 50 years, anytime I saw a difficult patient, I knew I'd seen it twice during that internship year, and I had a head start. And it was really true. That's what happened. Number two, my wife and I got by on the $200 a month I told you we made. I didn't tell her, and I saved the $125, the extra check. 125 times 12, Andy? $1,500. I sent the check to Mr. Simpson from the company, and I paid my debt to him. So that was done. But I had to get away from medicine. I knew we'd done a million things we shouldn't have done, didn't know what the heck we were doing. That's why I say I hope it's not happening anymore. And I went to graduate school in medical engineering at Drexel. I did fine there for a year. I got a big research grant. It was a four-year program. But I liked medicine better. And the main thing I found was all the teachers and researchers were applying for things where they knew they could get money, but they didn't give a damn about. It was the same thing as the internship in its own way, a certain unethical element. If you applied for anything related to an artificial heart, you got money. So I quit again and went back into medicine. But I made a decision. Whatever happens to me in my life as a doctor, it's what I think is right and what I'm going to do, and not what somebody else is doing to me. And I think it turned out well, except for all the night calls that woke my wife up, and it's been a grand life. And I thank you all for listening.
Wow. Thanks, Don. All right, Paul is next, then Holly, and then Jay, and then we'll take a little break. Oh, did I miss Jean?
Yeah.
I was going to say Jean. Oh, sorry. Boy, that was a panic look. Okay, Jean, then Paul, then Holly, then we'll take a little break, and then we'll come back with the rest of our storytellers. So Jean Melter is originally from Los Angeles. She currently lives in San Luis Obispo. She is a writer. So please welcome Jean Melter.